ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद्भागवतम् फर्स्ट कैनो चैप्टर 13 धृतराष्ट्र क्विट्स होम आग्नेयनिःसृष्टो धृतश्च Garodarascha dushitaha Ritam chetram dhanam yesham Taddatta asubhikya Agnya nishrishto dhatascha Garodarascha dushitaha Katam shetram janam yesham Taddatta asubhityat Agnya nishrishto dhatascha Garodarascha dushitaha Kritam chetram dhanam yesham Taddatta asubhikiyat
Agni
Fire
Nishrishta
Set Datha
Given
Cha
And
Gara
Poison
Dara
Married wife
Cha
And
Dushita, insulted. Kritam, usurped. Chetram, kingdom. Dhanam,
wealth.
Yesham, of those. Tat,
there.
Zatai,
given by.
Asubi,
subsisting.
Kiyat,
is unnecessary.
Translation. There is no need to live a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. Purport. The system of Varnashrama religion sets aside a part of one's life completely for the purpose of self-realization and attainment of salvation in the human form of life. That is a routine division of life. But persons like Dhritarashtra, even at their weary, ripened age, want to stay home, even in a degraded condition of accepting charity from enemies. Vidura wanted to point this out and impressed upon him that it was better to die like his sons than accept such humiliating charity. 5,000 years ago, there was one Dhritarashtra. But at the present moment, there are Dhritarashtras in every home. Politicians especially do not retire from political activities unless they are dragged by the cruel hands of death or killed by some opposing element. To stick to family life to the end of one's human life is the grossest type of degradation, and there's an absolute need for the Viduras to educate such Dhritarashtras even at the present moment. Om Yana Kimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Once again, Srila Prabhupada is making an appeal for persons to take up the greatest career, which is to remind the ignorant population of the real goal in life. In yesterday's class, we heard Prabhupada conclude that. We can just imagine how responsible a task is entrusted to a sadhu like Mahatma Vidura. The responsibility to educate people for going back to Godhead. And his work. And then today he's saying that to stick to family life to the end of one's human life is the grossest type of degradation. And there is an absolute need for the Viduras to educate such Dhritarashtras, even at the present moment. So this is our program, to teach people how to use their brain. Presently, they have no brain. It's just something else functioning. be a big hunk of pork or something. Big hunk of pork, what do you call it, marinated with wine, smoked with marijuana, and surcharged with lust, anger, envy, and greed. That's what they call a brain. Big piece of barbecue up there. Basted with, you know, that liquor. Smoked with marijuana. And burning with lust. And they say, this is intelligence. I'm thinking. So, day after day at the loft, we can see what we're dealing with. People who think they're coming from intelligent backgrounds, living in an intelligent society, and they think that they have an intelligent future. And gradually they find out they're far from the mark. It's a very extreme emergency situation. And that means those who take up this foremost welfare work, they can receive great blessings from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like during a war, even if an ordinary boy from a small town goes off to fight, he has a chance to be a great hero and win a medal. Ordinarily, he would just remain an obscure farmer boy. Similarly, in extreme times like these, ordinary souls can be eligible to receive great blessings from the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you're taking up this emergency work. But in order to do emergency work or any kind of work for Krishna, we have to qualify ourselves. And the first qualification is to learn how to control the senses. Oh, this is the thing that becomes like poison to us sometimes, because all of Western so-called culture is pushing you. Let your senses loose. Let your senses loose. There'll be relief. There'll be fulfillment. There'll be satisfaction of curiosity. Let those senses loose. And everything in Vedic culture says, control those senses, control those senses. Curb the desires of the body and mind. So what to do? How to resolve what may appear to someone as tension. On the one hand, society is pushing you. On the other hand, the Vedic civilization and your knowledge of it is telling you, control, 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 control your senses. What to do? From the external point of view, to an outsider, it appears to be a lot of tension that might cause the devotee to break and crack. Such outsiders don't understand that a devotee is always watered and nourished by the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name, by hearing about Krishna. Krishna is not different from his name, and he's present in discussions of his glory. Therefore, a devotee's life is not one of rigid denial, desert-like abnegation, like some kind of, in the early days of Christianity, had the, what they called the desert monks, desert fathers, yes. These were the early Christians who no one knows of, they don't talk about today. They would go off into the desert and live like hermits trying to follow Christ. And they left behind some writings. So they called the desert fathers. But modern Christians, they don't know about them, or if they do, they dismiss them as Gnostics, speculators who deviated from real Christianity. Actually, that's not so. Right after the time of Jesus, and during the time of Jesus, so many people accepted that you have more than one life, is reincarnation. But now, when Christians today look back, they say, oh, those people were all Gnostics, they were influenced by paganism. That is not a fact. There were many ascetics, many hermits, right after the time of Christ, who established monastic communities in the desert, things like that. And there they cultivated very intense Christianity. Still, Krishna consciousness is not like that. The goal is not to undergo physical hardships. The goal is to please Krishna. These physical things that are required are simple, but many people consider them a hardship. It's considered like living in the desert, being a desert hermit. no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, no use. And gradually, as one becomes aware of what Krishna consciousness is, we want to not unnecessarily increase our eating and sleeping. Not that we should eat too much or eat too little or sleep too much and sleep too little. Krishna says that in the Gita. You can't be a yogi if you err on either side. So it's always a constant effort by a devotee to adjust his or her eating and sleeping so that it is a nice offering to Krishna. Because the whole point of civilized life is to reduce the bodily demands. Bodily demands are not absolutely required. In other words, we are spirit soul. Yet, we have these bodies, and they are Krishna's energy, so we have to take care of them. Vedic culture means everyone in society, to varying degrees, becomes acclimated to reducing their bodily demands. Bodily demands are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The more you can reduce your bodily demands, the easier it'll be to practice your self-realization. Every time you act to increase your bodily demands, you have to pay. The more you eat, sleep, and mate, and make arrangements for your so-called security in this world, the more you have to work hard. Whenever you think of increasing your bodily demand, you just think of the price tag attached to it. Then you start to think twice. Just like when you go to a shop. Hopefully you don't have any more shoppers here. But when you go to a shop, you look, oh, this is nice. I remember my mother used to drive me crazy seeing her girlfriend next door. They used to go to church. Kyle fall in the car to go to church. And after church, they would drive straight to the section of New York City where you're living, where they had the department stores. And these were big department stores, big windows in the front, and all the ladies' fashions. You know, they knew how to, the whole point, marketing, you know how to get the ladies to spend their money. So they would, I remember I was just a 6 or 7 year old boy. Well, at that time, I had, what, 3 kids, maybe 2 kids. Her girlfriend next door had 2 kids. So they would just herd us all the kids in the car, leave from church, and go for them to do window shopping. And they would just go from window to window. I remember as a little boy.
Oh, look at that. It's fabulous.
The ladies still use that word, fabulous, about fashion. Yeah. I remember still. We here are these little kids who are just tagging along with our mothers, and they just went from window to window. Look at that girl! Oh, fabulous! Now they knew they had no money to buy. Her girlfriend was a dress designer, she felt she had that ability, but she never made any money from it. Anyway, they just go from window to window looking at the latest coats and dresses and this and that. I was just really hated it. I was thinking, home we're missing the baseball game. We had to go to church. Now he has to look and do window shopping. This is her mother and her friend. Look at all the fashions. You know, the baseball game has started. Let's get out of here. They would look, but they would not buy. Why? Because they knew. It costs money. We can't afford the price. So similarly, we should learn to consider bodily demands in that way. These things that the body is requesting of us may look attractive, but you must always consider the price tag. So then maybe you should do it just like my mother was. Oh, it's fabulous. But then you have to walk away. In order to
to work hard.
If you learn the art of how to be content with minimal needs, then it's very simple to live. If you can remain content, cultivating your spiritual wealth, then your life is very simple. But you notice, as soon as you feel you have to increase your bodily demands, so many complications come. So Srila Prabhupada's desire was that all the ashrams, that means whether you're married or not, you learn how to live simply. As soon as you get on the escalator of increasing bodily demands, then your life becomes complicated and you have less and less time to devote to the real business of life. Simple living requires culture, it requires training. In Vedic culture, the children from proper homes, they would all receive training in austerity and minimizing bodily demands. Children, they can very easily appreciate austerity. But if you pamper them from the very beginning, that's a great crime. Because children can very easily do without. Just like, I remember, I'd gone somewhere with John and Ame and their family, their kids. So, by a lake. So I wanted to go for a swim. I knew it was inland, you know, in September, so the water would be very cold. So I put on, you know, a wetsuit and everything like that. Went into the water, and still it was so cold. I had to come right out, fingers and feet were just so cold. Yeah, the little kids, 5, 6 years old and 3 years old, they were just sporting at the edge of the water for 45 minutes. They came out, they were just shivering like anything, but it was all in fun. Didn't bother them. Of course, it's true the water near the edge was warmer, but still, it was cold. But they were just playing. They could tolerate. The main thing was they wanted to play. And even though they were shivering, they felt they had a good time. So Vedic culture trains the best children how to live minimally. That's a great service. And then when the children get older, they keep that realization with them. Even when they marry, they still have an understanding that this is a temporary situation. And now, at the end of life, you're hearing how it's proper that the man and woman, they retire from family life and prepare to go their separate ways. Well, this is very attractive. It shows you what the purpose of human life is. And people are so empty and crazy because they have no purpose. And if you try to tell them a purpose, as we were discussing yesterday, they say, well, everybody has their own purpose. It's nice you have a purpose, but I gotta find my own purpose. There's no civilization, no culture that is able to inculcate the essential values of human life. We're reading about Dhritarashtra. He's clinging to living with his wife in comfort at the tail end of his life. Prabhupada writes here, to stick to family life at the end of one's human life is the grossest type of degradation. Why? You see your grandparents or your parents, you know, they're probably in their senior years, their old age, but they think now is the time we can enjoy our relationship. We've worked so hard all our life raising our kids, they stay together, and now we finally, you know, at the tail end of our life, now we can just enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. traversed all the marital problems and crises, and generally, if the husband and wife, materially speaking, if they can stay together till 45, till they're 45, then all the turbulence that accompanies family life dies down. They've been through so many crises and wars between them, and that's normal. And by the time they're 45, the relationship is really mellow and mature. And so then they become really attached. Okay, we fought, you know, in our marriage, we went through these problems, that problems. You know, now we're 45, we're less passionate, and now we can just really appreciate one another, how we've been together through thick and thin. So you think, well then, this is the time when they should really cling and stay together. The peaceful years have come. What does Vedic culture say? No way! This is a very dangerous time. Actually, human life is full of danger. Teenage years are dangerous. You can ruin yourself for life in your teenage years. In your 20s is dangerous. And also, the so-called mature years, your late middle age years, in the beginning of old age, they're dangerous too, because at that point, the husband and wife think, oh, why should we fight? I know, you know, I'm used to his living, he's used to my living. We both realize we just want a comfortable life, and we just help one another be comfortable. That's what old people are like. They just made a peace treaty. It comes naturally when you're past the age of 45 or 48 or like that. We're just going to help each other be comfortable. He'll be around to call the doctor when I need, and I'll be around to call the doctor when he needs. I'll remind him to take his medicine. Have you seen old fat? That's what they like, yeah. Did you take your prunes? Yeah. Because you forgot to take your prunes.
Oh, yes, dear. Oh, yes, thank you.
And, you know, they just sit together and watch television, you know, or they, you know, go play bowls or something like that. So it's supposed to be the nice years, and they talk about the grandchildren or their children. And yes, they've had their disagreements in the past, they've had their crises. All marriages have their severe moments. But now they feel a sense of satisfaction. They went through all that. You know, they learn to tolerate each other. So it would seem that at that point, you're 48 or so, you should just settle in for the duration and have a nice, peaceful old age as the body rots and deteriorates, and the husband and wife help one another to be comfortable in all circumstances. No. The Vedic culture says, at the age of 50, you retire. The husband and wife can still be together, but they have no more family concerns. They retire from pushing on the family, and they fully engage in spiritual practices together. And then, after that, the next stage is that they separate completely. Now, some of them may wonder, why is that, you know? This modern society is so doggish that people glorify if man and woman stay together until the last breath. Oh, that's real love. Now here, you're reading that it's the grossest kind of ignorance. Real hate. It seems like love, but it's horrible. Because to remain in family life to your last moment means you're simply thinking about the body until the last moment, and at the time of death. You won't make any advancement. You're just thinking about the bodily conception of life. That is a great disaster at the time of death. It means you've wasted your human form of life. So the Vedic prescription is that at the age of 50, Panchasurva Parambraja. Time for the forest. Forest means retire from the economic and social affairs of family. And then to separate completely. So, recently someone was telling me, I think last Sunday, the Sunday before this Sunday, Thursday night, there was a show on television in New Zealand which showed a man dying from cancer. Did anyone tell you about that? Yeah. It supposedly showed a man actually dying from cancer. It showed him in his final months. His belly swollen with a tumor. Maybe it was his belly was swollen because he had liver cancer or something, anyway. And they showed him, even up till his last moment of giving up the body. I would like to see this. Possible. Is there any way you can get these things if you miss them? The TV station will tell you.
You just see how emotional you
No one told you about it, huh? You never heard anything. I knew so much more. It was Thursday night. I think Thursday, that's what they said. And it was last week. So I would have loved to see it, because death is the real thing. But they showed how the man's wife, he had a young wife, she was taking care of him up to the last second. Everyone would think, oh, this is very nice, how loving, how tender. That was the whole point. This is a real marriage. This is real love. She was waiting on him hand and foot, giving him warmth and care until the last, until he departed. Now, based on ignorance, you'll say, how glorious. The Vedic standard is, how hellish. She's not showing him real love. She's destroying his future chances. Because he's going to give up his body thinking of her. Thinking of her means not thinking of her soul. He's thinking of her body. And that means his future will also be the bodily conception. Probably not in the immediate body. Unless we hear what is the real standard, we'll never know. That's why it's so ridiculous when people go around talking about love and care and warmth. They don't know what they're talking about. It's always the bodily conception of life. Vidura, he's being merciful to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra's son kicked Vidura out of the palace. Vidura is a part of the family. Yet, Dhritarashtra's son, Duryodhana, kicked Vidura out of the palace. And Vidura took it as an opportunity to go on pilgrimage for spiritual perfection. Now, this is later. When Dhritarashtra kicked him, when Dhritarashtra's son, his favorite son, his pet son, Duryodhana, kicked Vidura out of the palace, that was before the battle of Kurukshetra. So Vidura went on pilgrimage, and then after the battle of Kurukshetra, he came back for the aftermath, in which all Dhritarashtra's 100 sons had been wiped out, killed. And yet, Dhritarashtra was living in the home of the Pandavas so comfortably, the very person Dhritarashtra had tried to kill by every method he could think of. So, Vidura is coming back to be merciful. This is what it means to be a sadhu. Tolerant. Vidura didn't think, oh, Dhritarashtra's son insulted me, forced me to leave home. No. He's thinking, some or other, I want to try to help Dhritarashtra. Some or other, I want to try to help. Dhritarashtra's wife, Gandhari, although she's a woman, she's known as one of the greatest ascetics. Srimad Bhagavatam. Very austere, very self-controlled. So Vidura came to give benefits to both of them. to give them instructions at this crucial moment. Old age means yellow light. Yellow light lets you know the red light is coming, death is coming. So Vidura is coming to remind them. Yellow light is flashing. What are you doing just lounging around comfortably in the home of your former enemy? How can you be so degraded? How can you be so... how can you accept this humiliation? You see, Dhritarashtra is Kshatriya, Vedic warrior, martial class. So for them, pride is very important. So Vidura is giving them both material and spiritual incentive. What kind of representative of the warrior caste are you? You're so spineless that you're willing to live at the home of those who conquered you. You're letting them serve you. Of course, that's not the main point, but Vidura is using all these circumstances to impel Vidura to leave the situation for spiritual realization. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna would also use material incentives. He would tell Arjuna, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Don't think that if you leave this battlefield without fighting, everyone's going to praise you as a saintly person. No. They'll ridicule you. They'll look down upon you. And for one who has been honored so much like you, this would be worse than death. That's a material argument. But Krishna is using everything to get Arjuna to do the right thing, to surrender. So people, they sometimes say, well, Bhagavad Gita is just about pure spiritual. It's not practical for us who live in the material world. No, Bhagavad Gita is both. All properly directed for the ultimate goal of life. So Krishna is telling Arjuna like that. Also, Arjuna is related to Krishna. So Krishna is letting him know, if you act like this, you know, it also reflects on me. So Krishna is using the bodily relationship also to, as incentive. Of course, Krishna has no material body. He appears to take on family just to give devotees a chance who want to relate to him in that way. He appears to take a mother or father because there are devotees who want to love Krishna in parental love. He appears to have family dealings, but actually everyone is related to Krishna. Krishna is the seed of the father, everyone. Sarva yoma shukam punkaya muktaya sambhadamaya. You should know that of all species of life, I'm the seed of the father. They're all born from material nature, and I put the seed in material nature. So everyone is child of God. Why do you think God only had one son? A man can have so many sons. Not too common these days because the men are impotent. He's so much older than sacrifice. Cannot have sons. So many men can't even have children. This is the effect of what he said. Bad lifestyle. But anyway, normally a man can have many sons. So why do you say that God only has one son? When it says that he has one son, that means favorite son, that particular son became favorite by his bhakti, by his devotion. But all living entities are sons of God. Yet and still, when Krishna comes, he accepts family. He appears in a particular dynasty. But all that is just a way of sporting for Krishna. Telling Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, from the material point of view and the spiritual point of view, you don't do this. And here, in the Bhagavatam, Vidura is using material arguments. How can you, a member of the warrior dynasty, accept such humiliation? You insulted one of the wives of the very persons who are giving you shelter now. Have you no shame? You tried to steal. In fact, you did steal their kingdom and wealth, and now you're living at their home. Now you may say, why is it that the Pandavas, headed by Yudhishthira, are allowing Dhritarashtra to stay at their home, even though Dhritarashtra put them through many years of hell. Well, the Pandavas are devotees of the Lord. They feel no anger towards anyone. Dhritarashtra's sons and cronies, they try to insult Draupadi. That is a very big thing in Vedic culture, to try to publicly insult a chaste woman. They try to disrobe her in public in a huge arena. Now that would be considered even. Very nice. Very nice career this woman has, disrobing in public. But in Vedic culture, it's considered a huge offense. So we can learn what the real standard of civilization is by studying Srila Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we don't know. You're getting both material and spiritual here. But it's all about culture and society and civilization then, for self-realization. Vidura's real point is not that Dhritarashtra should protect his pride and his honor. No. Vidura's real point is get out of here and go to the forest, retire. Get a move on it. So this is a very powerful chapter. Very emotional. You should learn how to see the emotions in Srimad Bhagavatam. The materialists, they try to accuse that a devotee's life is devoid of emotional content. That's not so. This Bhagavatam, this chapter is packed with emotion. But they are purified emotions. There's emotion in the material world, but those emotions are perverted reflections of emotions in the spiritual world. So, Krishna consciousness introduces you to the pure spiritual emotions of the spiritual world. It's not that you extinguish emotions. Now, if we are humble, we'll admit that we don't know what real emotions are. We're just dealing with shadows. Emotional fulfillment is on the pure spiritual platform. And by hearing from Krishna, we can learn about the pure emotional activities of the spiritual world. And that will help you to remain aloof from these pseudo-emotional activities of the material world. The emotional activities of the material world, they'll never satisfy you. They just seem to satisfy you. You cannot become comfortable by fulfilling them. You become comfortable by understanding the emotions of the spiritual world. That's why, for the book Nectar Devotion, Srila Prabhupada said, even if you don't understand it, hearing will bring back your memories of your original Krishna consciousness. Any questions? About Krishna and to discuss how to serve Krishna better and how to avoid Maya. And also Rupa Goswami and the instruction gives you the 6 ways that are associated. Accepting prasad, giving prasad. Accepting gifts, giving gifts, and revealing your mind to the other person. Loving exchanges. Not that it might have any difficulty. Some And we should always try to associate with devotees considered more advanced than ourselves, so we can be aware of the higher level. Particularly those who are householders. Householders can have a tendency to associate with other householders and just talk about how to remain attached. How to cultivate clinging to the material world. Well, my standard is so high. How do you think? I have a lot of something. I'm isolated. Each way, like a whole silent conspiracy develops. Everyone agrees that, yeah, just do what you can, you know, but, you know, for householders, you know. You know. And if anyone tries to do different, if anyone tries to uphold the proper standard, well, that's the exception, you know. They're not for real. Life is what you make it. So let us remember that enlightenment begins with sense control. And every day, practically speaking, you have to ask yourself, why am I controlling my senses? Because every day society is telling you, there's no need to. So even if you agree that the dresses look fabulous, still, you don't pay the price. It's like window shopping. Oh, that's so nice. Then you have to keep walking. And it becomes easy through the process of shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, hearing and chanting about Krishna. We're not suffering from a dry life of hardship like the desert fathers. No, we're always watered by Krishna Katha, the sound vibration of Krishna. That fulfills us. And the more you work to give that sound vibration to others, the more you have. Like Abhay Chandra noticed it after a long time. Happy everyone is. Everyone is happy. The devotees are happy because they're doing the highest love. They're demonstrating the perfection of love. And even the guests, they may not know what's going on, but they're happy too because whether they know it or not, they're being loved in the best way. They're getting their first taste of real love. Reconnection to Krishna. So a devotee is not a sentimental lover. We are very practical, scientific lovers. You have to remember whose pleasure the activity is for. Shyness is an important part of female beauty. The more shy a woman is, the more beautiful she thinks she is, according to David's standard. These days it's the opposite. I think that's how Sunday discussion started. The discussion started. According to the Vedic human standard, shyness makes a woman more beautiful. According to the modern cat and dog standard, the more you reveal, the better, you know, the more successful you are. That's the whole purpose of fashion, isn't it, modern? Reveal it this way, reveal it that way. The same thing, just now this way, now that way, turn it this way, turn it that way, slash it here, slash it there. Put a hole here, put a hole there, right? Yeah. Give a look from this way, give a look from that way, you know? Same body, but you know, you just drink it this way, drink it that way.
Facility, but it'll be limited, you know, and be temporary. And then Krishna says, another class of persons who are not exactly demons, they don't worship the demigods, and they're not devotees. Vyasa, Vyasa, Atana, Manite, Mama, Buddhaya, Parambhava, Adhanata, Malavya, Anutama. There are others, they think that Krishna has assumed this name of form of personality due to their unintelligence. They don't know that Krishna's transcendental nature, which is supreme. In other words, Krishna calls the demigod worship Alpha Buddha, little in. Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvaksha, Yogamaya Samavrita, Mudayam Navidanandi, Lokayam Ha.
Right? You just take the same substance, the material body, and you just agitate, you know, the man's mind, you know, it'll just, you know, these different revelations. And so, and then, the people have to buy the fashions. It takes money. And what's the purpose of wearing the fashion? What, on Monday you have a dress that has a slit here. So the men think, oh. On Tuesday you have a dress that has a slit here. And the men, ooh. On Wednesday it's a low back. The same body. Yeah, but so much money is spent, you know, giving a look here, giving a look there, this perspective, that perspective. The same thing, just packaged in different ways. And that's supposed to be human life. So, for giving the medicine of Krishna consciousness that we are bold, we don't want to see people suffer. So, Srila Prabhupada's advice for ladies who are preaching Krishna consciousness, trying to help others, and say, you're a lamb at home and a lion in the cage. For helping others to relieve the suffering of people, we are very forward. But for ourselves, we are shy. When it comes to our own sense, we're shy. Not that we're shy about Krishna's service. For our sense, rather, occasion, we're shy. But for Krishna's service, we are very determined. You have to make the effort. If you're in circumstances which help you control your senses, you're very fortunate. But Krishna can test you. You can't just coast on the circumstances. You have to have the desire. But you know, you're living in very fortunate circumstances. But sometimes Krishna tests you and puts you in rocky circumstances. So you have to demonstrate some desire on your own. Just like if you have what's considered good parents. They may raise you very nicely, but sooner or later you're on your own. And then we'll see what you're made of. So, no, you have to develop the knowledge of why you should control your senses. You have to convince yourself. You can't just be a burden on others by saying, okay, I'm not going to worry about controlling my senses, especially if I'm around you. I guess it will happen automatically. When you distribute books, automatically your senses are controlled because you have to think, this is Krishna's book. These are Krishna's servants. How can I get them to take the medicine? But if you're serious about distributing Krishna literature, you have to have a very strict lifestyle so that you don't become contaminated by the material energy. You have to keep yourself in shape in order to do that welfare work. So gradually, you should realize that if I'm going to go on doing this activity, I have to take better and better care of myself. It's just practical. At least see it in that way. If you're trying to learn something, the way you pick it up is by being humble. And then that way you learn how to help others. Doesn't mean you know, just have blind faith. No. This is practical. If you want to learn something, you have to be a bit humble. Just like if you're going to school. If every time the teacher opens his or her mouth and you say, oh, I challenge that, how will the lesson ever go on? Did you do that at the Polytech every time? They're teaching you fashion design? They actually teach fashion design? So, you know, whatever they're teaching, you have to sit there and listen. You can't just, I don't accept that. You have to hear the teacher through, because ideally the teacher's supposed to know. Similarly, in spiritual life, if you're fortunate to have good association, then you should be submissive. It's very rare to have good association. So then why not be submissive and learn? And then you can help others. Today's student becomes tomorrow's teacher. Why you don't like being submissive? Best for you personally, or best for what? You have your own ideas of how you can best conduct yourself? Everyone should be thinking how I can best conduct myself. Then you discuss it with someone who has more experience. Not that you just have to bite your lip. No. Krishna consciousness is not like that. Krishna consciousness is the active process of using your intelligence in an expert way. Not that you're a speculator, but if you think, for me, it would be better like this, you present it to someone who has experience. And then you hear what they say.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. None of you did that? You didn't go window shopping and say it's fabulous? Didn't you work with a big shoe buyer, Karen? Did you say you had 30 pairs of shoes?
Yeah.
You just felt good when you had a new pair of shoes, huh? Just kept them all in the closet or something? Or 30 pairs, I mean, you actually wore all of them? And you were thinking, the men are going to really be looking at my feet and notice the shoes? Or is that? It's just for you to feel good about yourself. So, From the Vedic standard, this is exploitation. Society is exploiting women to be impulse shoppers, spend all their money on you, your new shoes. This is exploitation. What would you say, Madhuri? Do you see it as exploitation? Not yet. Yeah. So many of these shops are based on exploiting women, shops and stores. It used to be they'd have to bug their husbands for money, but now, the clever businessmen, you know, they've arranged society that family life is being destroyed, so, you know, the woman is supposed to go out and get her own money and spend it.
Hi, Kelly.
Who's cooking today? Anyway, I'll be
for you.